Okay, well, I'm Chris White, an elder here at Southwood, and I'm going to start by kind of putting you to the test in a fun, playful way. What is your favorite book of the Bible? Think for a second. To some of you, maybe you have to, I don't know, maybe you have a favorite verse, and you just pick that book as your favorite book. Maybe there's, if you're stuck, you can always go with Proverbs or Matthew, one of the classics. But you just prayed with your neighbor, so I'm going to have you quickly tell your neighbor what's your favorite book of the Bible. 60 seconds, go. Out front. There you go. Okay. Well, I asked that question because I remember when I was in college, the college leader asked everybody that same question, and we were in like a little smaller circle, like a small group, and everybody went around and said their book, and when I said mine, this college student, this girl said, "Oh, that's so sad." And I'm like, "Really?" So you can tell where, maybe you can tell where I'm headed today. We're going to cover a book of the Bible that maybe kind of has a bad rap, or maybe could be misinterpreted. Even yesterday, we had an early Thanksgiving, and I told my uncle, you know, this is my uncle who's been on church staff for years, and this uncle you look up to. I said, "Hey, Uncle Will, I'm preaching tomorrow on," and he's like, "Oh, man." I'm like, "Really? Even Uncle Will? So what book are we talking about?" We're talking about Ecclesiastes. Oh, see, really? Yeah, come on. So I'm going to try to prove today in a few minutes that it's a book of the Bible with a bit of a bad rap. And I think you all know where that kind of bad rap comes from, right? There's a certain word repeated many times that it's like, well, how else am I supposed to interpret that? Well, we're going to talk about that today. So let's go ahead and jump to that word. So we're in Ecclesiastes 1, if you want to turn there. And we'll be parsed there today. So Ecclesiastes 1 in the NIV says this, and I'm sure you've heard it, right? "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." Really? So now I'm putting you back to the test with your same neighbors you just spoke to. Why do you think he used the word meaningless? 60 seconds again. Go. Okay, let's talk about that word. So if that single word is really guiding our mind in terms of how we see Ecclesiastes, let's look into that word a little bit more. In fact, let's go back to basics. What is that word? That. Anybody here read Hebrew? I don't see any hands. I don't either, but I watched a YouTube video yesterday. What if I gave you the pronunciation or the pronunciation of each letter? So tell your neighbor real quick, how would you pronounce that? Not sure? Yeah, I heard some people going a little bit. Well, here's some fun facts about Hebrew. Hebrew is pronounced right to left. Oh, okay. And there's no vowels. So I don't know how you play Wheel of Fortune in Hebrew. Like, can I buy a vowel? Oh, man. So you can't buy a vowel. So there's no vowels, and you're reading it from right to left. So if you're reading it from right to left, how would you say that? You would say Hebel, right? H-B-L. Or B or a V. This word, you know, like a lot of things, can be pronounced differently. So the common pronunciations would be Hebel or Hebel. And I'm going to help you remember that today. I brought props today. I got several props. But one of our props, I just saw some yesterday driving around. If you're driving around Texas, what do you often see in the pastures sitting there in big rolls? Hay bales, right? So, you know, you got to, but here's the thing. You got to say hay bale without a Texas accent, which is hard. Who has a Texas accent in here? Who admits it? Okay, we got a few. I do too sometimes. But so we have to say hay bale without the Texas accent and really fast. Okay, ready? So Hebel. Okay, so you did it. You just learned some Hebrew today. And now you'll when I got this hay bale at Tractor Supply, it's actually making a mess up here. So I really apologize to, that'll help you hopefully remember this word. So again, what is this word? We've talked about this one word's distorted our understanding, and we talked about what it is in the Hebrew, but what does it mean? What does it mean? Notice my little prop there, or my little thing. I did that myself. I was pretty proud of myself. That little, so what is Hebel? Well, if you look in the NIV, as we just read, it says meaningless. If you look in the King James, it says vanity. How many can remember that, right? Vanity of vanities. The New American Standard says futility. Other translations could be empty, transitory, illusory, ephemeral, ineffective, fleeting. Okay, those are some of the translations. What does it literally mean in the Hebrew? And in the Hebrew, what did it mean? It meant, there we go, it meant vapor or breath. That's what it meant. And somebody may say, well, why don't they just call it that? And it's like, well, that's actually kind of a good point because that's what it's measured. That's what it is. That's what it's literally measuring or meaning is breath or vapor. So I'm going to use the word vapor today. I want you to picture. And I guess the other thing that would help me, I wish Solomon had just used like another metaphor that captured the essence of this, right? If you're going to say everything's meaningless or whatever that word is, everything's Hebel. If it is vapor, what if he'd used a better metaphor after it so we didn't have to be confused? Like chasing after wind or something like that. Oh, wait, he does. 38 times he uses the word Hebel. 38 times he talks about how things are vapor. And 9 times he says, like chasing after the wind. And that makes a lot more sense, doesn't it? That you're just chasing after this. It's just not there. I keep trying these things in life, and they just don't seem to stick. I want you to picture Solomon. You know, he had everything, right? If you go read Ecclesiastes, read Proverbs, Solomon had everything, everything you could ever want. I want you to picture him living a life like that. And I want you to picture him one day sitting there on a cold winter day. And he's outside and he breathes and that breath kind of goes out and just dissipates. How many people still enjoy doing that? Yeah, that's still fun. We don't do it very often here. It's too hot. But how many people enjoy doing that, right? And you picture Solomon doing it over and over, going, yeah, Hebel, isn't it? Picture him sitting on a beach and the waves crashing, and you see that mist kind of come up and dissipate over and over and over, no exceptions. And he sat there and he said, Hebel. So he sits down to write Ecclesiastes after a very, very brief verse in verse 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. What would he say next? After amassing all this wisdom, what would he say to us next? And we just read it, right? Vapor. It's all vapor. Don't chase the vapor is what he is trying to say. So when I think about this book, that's what helps me reframe it, that it goes from everything being meaningless. I mean, he says wisdom is meaningless, but later he says wisdom is a shelter. Oh, so maybe the word vapor does work really well here, because again, it's the original word, that kind of, it goes from this kind of depressing book to like, yeah, that's true. I've chased a lot of vapor. I've sought a lot of things. I've tried to fill that void, and it just doesn't seem to work. Aren't we all a lot like Solomon, where we tried to fill voids? You know, think about the finishing the sentence. If only I had blank, then I would be happy. Think about that for you now. I think about even my adult life. You know, if only I was engaged. If only we were married. If only we had kids. If only we could sleep again. If only they were out of diapers. If only they could kind of eat on their own. If only they were in school. If only they could play sports and play at a high level. If only they could graduate. If only they could get out of middle school. That's, of course, the next one. If only, and on each of those if onlys, what are we doing? After any of those stages, did Jennifer and I finally go, you know what? We've arrived. We're there. Hey, life is perfect. No. Anything we're trying to do to fill that void other than this, right, it just doesn't work. It's just fleeting. It's just vapor. And so you go on from there, don't you, right? If only the kids were, like I said, out of middle school. If only they're out of the teenage years. If only they could graduate. If only they could whatever. If only they had their own families. And it just never ends. And I think Solomon's reminding us that we're similar. So the question now is, I'm going to have you answer with your neighbors. Think for a minute, what are some of the vapors that you may chase? And I've got a little acronym here that can help us. Maybe it's a relationship that you, if only maybe somebody that you're married to or a kid of yours would do this, then I'd be happy. Maybe it's a relationship you want. If only I had blank, then I'd be happy. Then I'd be more content. Maybe it's an accomplishment. Oh, yeah, if only I had that position, that degree, that whatever, then I'd be happy. Or maybe a possession, right? Just something that, none of these things are inherently bad, but it's the chasing after them that's tricky. And by the way, I'll even add another A word there for under next to accomplishment. You can mentally put the word activity. Activity. Maybe there's an activity you chase, right? I can think of social media, right, where it's like I'm chasing this thing, and it just ends up being vapor. And by the way, as you're thinking, I like the rap acronym. I got a friend in here. I just looked at him. I know he likes rap music. So anybody else in here have a subwoofer in their car? Okay, there we go. We got a couple of hands. There we go. I'm getting choked up over here. Anybody else been to a Christian rap concert besides me? Okay, there we go. I went to my first Christian rap concert in the 1980s. So that's impressive, right? PID, Preachers in Disguise in Dallas. So that's all, you know. And my first car, 1980 Chevy Citation, one of the worst cars ever made, with two Rockford Fosgate 12-inch subwoofers in the trunk. And so, yeah, that it rattles your body. So, anyway, I'm just saying. Wait, I'm getting a signal in here from the back. I'm off the elder team. They just announced. No. But it was Christian rap. Come on, y'all. So my question to you is this. What do you chase? So back to your groups. If you're in like a group of six or something, you might need to split up for this one. Or a group, even a group of four or five, maybe you get to smaller groups, but I'll let you decide. But what are some of the things that you chase that you feel like, again, relationship, accomplishment, activity, or possession that may be fleeting? Go. Thirty seconds. I Wasn't it true how we all have them? And again, none of those things may be inherently bad, but it's the degree to which we chase and kind of expect those to fulfill us that's the unfortunate part. So I'm going to read the next section in Ecclesiastes, and as I do, I want you to think, what shape comes to mind? What geometric shape comes to mind as you hear these verses? And also listen for the poetry here, too. Really good stuff. So Ecclesiastes 1, 4 through 10 says, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. As the sun rises and the sun sets, and hurrying to its place, it rises there again, blowing toward the south, then turning toward the north. The wind continues swirling along, and on its circular courses, the wind returns. I love this next verse. All rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. We talk about that in our family all the time. It's on our short list of little verses we focus on. And I mean, isn't it so true, right? Back to that, what does it turn out to be? But if this one's for real. If I could just get out of that debt, if I could just get that raise, if I could just get that promotion, if I just get a bonus this year, then I just know. And what do we find out? At that point, we just start wanting more. To the place where rivers flow, there they flow again. Okay, you're seeing the shape, I'm sure, already. And all things are wearisome. No one can tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see this, it is new. It has already existed for ages which were before us. So you know the shape, right? You see it. It kind of gives it away in that first section there. It's that circle, right? It's that cycle. And so today, what is Solomon challenging us to do? He's saying there's a cycle right in front of you. There's a cycle that we have a lot of practice on. And he's saying, y'all, come on, come on. I tried your cycles. I tried to fill the void. I chased vapor better than anyone. And he's saying so clearly in chapter 1, don't get on that cycle. Don't get on that cycle. I'm going to read a couple of interesting and just to me very meaningful insights. One's a commentary, so let me read this to you. A commentator about this section said, the constant use of repetition from the initial verse onward gives the rhythmic prose an incantatory power and at the same time registers one of its principal themes, that the very nature of all things is to constantly repeat themselves. I think I like that commentary because it uses the word incantatory, and I don't think I've ever used that word before, but I think it does kind of have that rhythm, doesn't it, where you're almost just like, yeah, that's so true. A friend of mine named Keith, who goes to Grace, once emailed me this. This is like 7 years ago. We were talking about this concept, and I think I was teaching home builders or something. But it says here, reading Ecclesiastes, this is what Keith said. I just love this. Reading Ecclesiastes is like dumping a bucket of ice water on a sleeping man. It wakes me up quick. Why do I waste time on things that don't matter? Why am I bickering with my wife or daughter? Why did I tell our youngest yesterday that it was too cold to go to the pool instead of just taking her down there and jumping in while we both laughed? Knowing that you are going to die is the only way to figure out what is important in life. Everybody knows that death is coming, but very few people, it seems, act like it. Like, drop the mic. I mean, that's just an email he sent me. So I need to talk to Keith more often. So really, let those words sink in. But there's another verse in the same chapter that I think also has a bad rap. And I think it can kind of come full circle as we look at this chapter to help us see a verse we might also misinterpret. Ecclesiastes 1:18 says, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Well, at least we're not reading this in a community that's really focused on learning with a big university around the corner. Is Solomon saying, don't get a degree? Don't waste your time on all that stuff. It's just sad. It's just going to be sad. Well, let's think about that word a little bit more. Let's talk about that word a little bit more. And I'll focus on the first phrase there because the two phrases are pretty similar. Increasing, but in much wisdom, there is much grief. So if you look at that word there in the Hebrew, the word grief isn't always even the first word in the definition. There's words like, or the other words are, vexation, provocation. I could maybe even add perplexity. So go with me here. In much wisdom, there's much vexation. In much wisdom, there's much perplexity. Wait a minute. How many of you would agree with me that the more you learn about how the world works, the more you learn about how people are, even the people you care about, the more you learn about that, doesn't it almost feel like a weight? The more wisdom, the more vexation. The more wisdom, the more perplexity. Yeah, that's true. So it takes this from, oh yeah, wisdom's bad, wisdom just makes you sad. Well, sad, I mean, I don't think sad's the right word. I think that vexation, I think that wisdom, all these things, it reminds us that these pursuits that we've done have just been vapor. So even that last verse there that seems pretty sad on the surface, it really does make sense. And that's why, I take Ecclesiastes when I read all this, and I kind of get excited. I feel like it's giving me a better blueprint. I feel like it's telling me, don't do that. Don't do that. So now when I think about reading Ecclesiastes, in particular the first chapter, I get excited. I read it kind of with a smile. Even when Solomon wrote that, right? I picture him, you know, like I said earlier, he's sitting on the beach or he's sitting in the cold, and he sits there and just kind of shakes his head, but kind of with a smile, and just says, vapor, vapor. It's all vapor, y'all. It's all vapor. And so to me, in a weird way, that's encouraging. So I'd say three lessons that kind of come out of this. Number one, things will fail you. Look at your neighbor and tell them, you'll fail me. That may be a little strong, but is it? But is it? Right? If you expect that person to be your savior, they will not. They cannot. Right? I've got to look up here for that. Not here. Not here. And so things will fail us. Even people will fail us. I love number two there. It's not in there. It's not in there. You know, we're looking for that happiness. We're looking for that contentment. We're looking in all these different places. And when we open the box, it's not in there. It's not in there either. And so think about what you shared earlier with your neighbor, the winds you chase, just reminding yourself, it's not in there. And then number three, just like I said, enjoy Ecclesiastes. Let's kind of flip the script a little bit. Make sure we interpret that word used 38 times and also just enjoy some of the lessons there that are just so applicable today. So applicable today. But here's a fun little twist. You know, our sermon series, as many of you know, was in Acts. And so I was asked if I wanted to or could preach today, and I said yes. But it would be nice if we could tie this back to Acts 20, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? But it really, does Ecclesiastes 1 have much to do with Acts 20? Surely it's going to be a pretty big stretch. And actually, it's not. I was talking to Trey Jordan about this, and some of the connections are pretty rich. You know, you can already see what Solomon's saying here, this endless cycle of futility. We know how that story ends. We know how that story ends. Well, then let's read what it says in Acts. So let me get it up on the screen here. So in Acts chapter 20, it says, "And now I entrust you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you the inheritance among all those who are sanctified." The inheritance. Okay, so we've got a choice here in terms of our inheritance, our legacy. You know, Paul is saying, or Solomon is saying, that old way isn't going to work. It's vapor. You know, and then Paul is saying, or Luke is saying, that I'm able to build you up and give you this inheritance, this deeper purpose. So the question comes back now to all of us as we wrap up today. What inheritance will we choose? Are we going to choose the pursuits of hoping for this, hoping for that, these things that we know end up being vapor? Or are we going to focus on our vertical relationship and allow Jesus and God to fuel us, allow his grace to fuel us to have a legacy with a real and a deeper impact? Great question. Great question that I know I wrestle with and I want to put into practice. Let me pray for us. God, thank you so much for just your word. Thank you for your word coming alive in ways to me that just resonate so deeply. Thank you for things that on the surface may seem sad or depressing, even Ecclesiastes, that is, that when you really look at it, there's so much hope. There's so much of a roadmap, partially of what not to do, but also what we can do, God. So help us to do what it says in Acts 20, where we really look at, okay, let me focus on your word. Let me focus on your purpose, on the things that have a kingdom impact, not just an earthly impact. In Jesus' name, amen.